How soothing, how special. Thank you. Can we stand together, please, for the reading of Mark's Gospel, the 7th chapter? Verses 1 to 23 of Mark's Gospel, the 7th chapter. Now, when the Pharisees gathered together to him with some of the scribes who'd come from Jerusalem, they saw that some of his disciples ate with hands defiled, that is, unwashed. For the Pharisees and all the Jews do not eat unless they wash their hands, observing the tradition of the elders. And when they come from the marketplace, they do not eat unless they purify themselves. And there are many other traditions which they observe, the washing of cups and pots and vessels of bronze. And the Pharisees and the scribes asked Jesus, "Why do your disciples not live according to the tradition of the elders, but eat with hands defiled?" And Jesus said to them, "Well did Isaiah prophesy of you hypocrites, as it's written, 'This people honors me with their lips, but their heart's far from me. In vain do they worship me, teaching as doctrines the precepts of others. You leave the commandment of God and hold fast the tradition of the elders.'" And he said to them, "You have a fine way of rejecting the commandment of God in order to keep your tradition. For Moses said, 'Honor your father and your mother,' and 'Those who speak evil of father or mother, let them surely die.' But you say, 'If we tell father or his mother that what you've gained from me is korban, that is, it's given to God, then you no longer permit that one to do anything for his father or his mother, thus making void the word of the Lord through your tradition, which you hand on. And many such things you do.' And he called the people together and said to them, 'Hear me, all of you, and understand. There's nothing outside a person which by going into a person can defile that person. But the things which come out of a person are what defile. And when he had entered the house and left the people, his disciples asked him about the parable. And he said to them, 'Are you also without understanding? Do you not see that whatever goes into a person from outside cannot defile, since it enters not the heart, but the stomach, and so passes on?' And thus he declared all foods clean. And he said, 'What comes out of a person is what defiles a person. For from within, out of the heart, come evil thoughts, fornication, theft, murder, adultery, coveting, wickedness, deceit, licentiousness, envy, slander, pride, foolishness. All these evil things come from within, and they are what defile.'" This is the word of the Lord. You can be seated, please. In the time that I served as a hospice chaplain, we had some strict protocols. One of those was about infection control. We had several different nurses over a period of 25 years who would have this position of infection control nurse that we lovingly, and sometimes not quite as lovingly, referred to as hand-washing Nazis. One such person, a friend of mine, I loved her for her quick wit, for her dedication. And she would preach to us that 90% of all disease is spread by hand contact. And then she'd go into the required hand washing. You do it a certain way. You use warm water and you use soap and you lather up all the way to your wrist. And you sing happy birthday twice to yourself while you're doing this. And then you rinse from the wrist down and let it drip off your fingertips. And you use paper towels to dry your hands. And then you use the paper towel to open the door so that you can leave the restroom, not having defiled yourself again. At one of the annual meetings where she would again be speaking to us about the necessity of hand washing, I'm not sure what possessed me, but I stopped at the restroom and washed my hands before I went in. I got there and I saw several friends who looked kind of glum, and I said, "What's going on?" And you'll see. And about that time, she called my name. I went across the hall with her into a closet where she shut the door. It's pitch black, and she flips on this infrared light or black light or something and scans my hands, waiting to show me bacteria and other hobgoblins that might be living there. But I just washed my hands, and there was nothing there. I'd passed her pop test. She said she was pleased, but she really sounded disappointed. She really wanted the gotcha moment as a teaching moment. Now, imagine coming to this table, this place, and at the doors there are people who are playing gotcha. Maybe checking your hands. Maybe checking the kind of coffee that you carry in. Maybe checking your pedigree. Maybe reminding you that you have an uncle who's in prison. Maybe suggesting that your skin is the wrong color, that your orientation isn't right. Suggesting that somehow you are not fit for this table. That's kind of what's going on here. This question, why do your disciples not live by our traditions? Some striking things about that. For me, there's this stunning contrast of the question itself. If you read it in the larger context, the sixth chapter has Jesus feeding the 5,000, the emphasis that there's enough for everybody and that you are enough. There's this Jesus walking on water, and you've heard me say dancing on the water. And all I can say, if I could walk on water, I'd be dancing on the water. Be my Dancing with the Stars moment. The ones I do in private that nobody sees and nobody ever will see. You laugh, but I think you'd bust a move too. Then there's this healing at the end of the chapter. It's like this grand announcement that there's this new age where the inbreak of God is here. And this is their question? Did you wash your hands? You violated our traditions. Well, let's be fair. Traditions are good. Can be. Once a month, the first Sunday of the month, our tradition is to have the Lord's Supper. Our tradition is to practice Advent Sunday after Sunday leading up in the season of anticipation, and then Lent, and then Easter, or the holidays of Thanksgiving and Labor Day and 4th of July and Memorial Day. All these things give us a shared history, a connection to the past, a sense of identity, a sense of to whom we belong, a renewal of shared values. But here in the passage I read, traditions have become boundaries, walls that keep some people on the other side of the wall. They decided who was clean, who was not, who was acceptable to God and who wasn't. They used this purity code to decide. And their ritual purity demonstrated their status, their power. There's an awful lot to keep up with. You had to know it for one thing, and you had to have time to do it for the other. You had to cook your food in a certain way, and only certain foods. These are the activities of the wealthy. Not the daily people, not the farmers who eked out a living from the land. Not the people who lack the resources and time that have trouble keeping up with all these rules. And as a result, they would live on the margins. And the Pharisees gladly filled the role of labeling who was fit and who was unfit. And after this marvelous sixth chapter of Mark, they want to label them unfit. These Pharisees could also claim that your crops were harvested on the wrong day, on the Sabbath. They could claim a bunch of other things about your harvest, your food, they could claim the tithe at the marketplace from your produce. And keeping up with all this made them feel righteous and powerful. They seem to feel threatened here by people who are free of their rules, people who don't seem to care about washing their hands, people who can dance on the water, people who can heal others, people who can feed multitudes so that there's enough, who indicate that everybody is enough. Something new and vital is stirring, and they missed it. I read once that nobody gives up power without a fight, and their power is threatened. Hence the question. The second thing I notice about this question, it's a mean question, really. It's petty and ugly. I think they feel that threat. They can't do what Jesus did. Their economic apple cart is being upset. And I think this comes from a place of fear and insecurity, afraid that they won't measure up. A lot of energy spent controlling and containing and trying to confine what they think of as sacred. But along comes this Jesus breaking the rules, dancing on the water, feeding people, healing people. Well, if people start following this Jesus, then they won't be needed. They're the people who prove their worth by keeping all these rules. But I can't help but think that at night, in the dark, they must have had to wonder why they still felt so empty. They help themselves to feel better about themselves by pronouncing somebody else as less than they were. And so they devalue and they degrade others. I was reading this week the confession from a so-called mean girl who's grown up now and carries a deep regret for her behavior. And she says of that time as a teenager, she felt so awkward, wondered how in the world she'd fit in, never felt like she measured up, and she herself was being bullied, and so she in turn bullied other girls. I think that's what we do. Out of insecurity, out of feeling like we're not good enough, we take it out on somebody else. The Pharisees betray themselves with their meanness. And let us be clear. Let us be really clear. Religion that's mean is no religion at all. And Jesus says to them in their ugly question, "You guys talk a good game, but you have no heart." Heart for us is this emotional center. Heart for them was the moral core of a person. He was saying to them, ethically, you're empty. While you wash your hands and your utensils and prepare your food a certain way, the people that you should serve go hungry. And in your meanness, you miss the joy of dancing on the water. You miss the fulfillment of seeing people get well. You try to control and contain the sacred, but you cannot. There's a brief image at the end of the sixth chapter of Mark's gospel. And it's about people who are being healed, and it's about people who are reaching out just to grab hold of his garment. And this is, it's like Jesus is saying, latch on to God and hang on for dear life. It's going to be quite a ride. It's going to transcend all your rules. Then Jesus teaches them that what we take in food and drink is not the issue. Now, I know today we know about diet and what it does to your body and that sort of thing, but that's not what this is about. It's about what comes out of that moral core. There's a whole list in verses 21 and 22. When I was growing up, preachers would go through that list one at a time. We listened out of guilt, and I think sometimes maybe listening for possible outs as they preached. But they speak to us about how these things corrupt, corrode a people, a community, a nation, and certainly leaders. And all of them share a common characteristic. They all objectify the other person. They all act as if that person only exists to satisfy my wealth or my lust, or to be a person that I can put down with my slander. And all of them demean the humanity of other people. And all of them demean my own humanity. On my run yesterday, I passed this house that was up for sale. The realtor signs in the yard. But the sign did not list the square footage. It didn't list the price. It simply said, "I'm beautiful inside." Jesus invites us to a beauty inside with a rigorous scrutiny of our own hearts, our own moral centers. What's going on in here? He's not asking us to feel good. He's asking us to do good. Mark's audience was suffering persecution. So tempting to give up following this Jesus because it was just so doggone dangerous. To go back to a way that was safer. And here Mark presents them with this vivid contrast of life that dances and feeds and heals, as opposed to the folks who raise ugly questions. He's talking to them about in the worst of times, don't worry about what others do. Take care of what's inside of you. And I think Jesus wants more inside of us. Joy. The faith that can bust a move now and then. Peace. And patience and gentleness and kindness and self-control. Love. He wants us to look at others, not as those objects who can do something for me, but as folks who are just like me, mirrors of me, images of God, people who present to me the opportunity to love, to do so in joy. I say to you today, come to the table. Ain't nobody here doing those inspections, checking your hands. Nobody's going to be here checking your orientation or your political registration or your age or your illnesses or your Facebook page. It's just here because God loves each and every one of us. Amen.